The headlines: Tehran denounces Israeli Prime Minister's delusional claims against Iran as an attempt to forge an identity for itself and the illegitimate Zionist regime. The Iranian army holds a large-scale military exercise in the Oman Sea and north of the Indian Ocean. A court in Myanmar has convicted the country's deposed leader Aung San Suu Kyi on corruption charges and sentenced her to 7 years in prison. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has slammed as delusional the Israeli prime minister's claims against the country. Nasser Kanani says Benjamin Netanyahu is trying to forge an identity for himself and the illegitimate Israeli regime. Kanani says the Israeli regime has for 70 years been suffering from an identity crisis, accompanied by genocide, looting, forced displacement, and many other human rights violations. He said these atrocities are the result of the wrong policies of the U.S., the U.K., and some other European countries in supporting the regime. Kanani stressed that Palestine is indestructible, while the Israeli regime is doomed to decline. Netanyahu was sworn in as Israeli Prime Minister on Thursday in a comeback as the head of a hard-right cabinet. In his address to Parliament, he accused Iran of seeking to develop a nuclear bomb, an allegation Tehran has repeatedly denied. Also, Iranians hold demonstrations to commemorate the 2009 nationwide rallies in support of the Islamic Republic that put an end to months of riots. The protests are being held across the country to mark what's called Ninth of Day. The name refers to an occasion on December the 30th, 2009, when millions of people all over Iran took to the streets to condemn riots that had followed the same year's presidential elections. The rallies put an end to months of foreign orchestrated unrest and brought back security.
Thousands turned out on Thursday to commemorate the 13th anniversary of the 2009 nationwide rallies that put an end to the post-election unrest back then and also renewed their allegiance to the Islamic establishment. I want to tell the whole world that even if all our enemies unite to defeat us, we will all defend our leader and our country.
I have two messages, one for our enemies and one for our people. To the enemies, I say, you cannot promote an anti-hijab culture in Iran. And to our people, I say, we should remain vigilant regarding the enemy's plots against the Islamic Republic.
The demonstrators also denounced any act of violence and sabotage by foreign-backed rioters against the Islamic Republic.
Anyone who believes in God and holds onto that belief will eventually be rewarded by God. This verse of the Holy Quran applies to the situation we're in today, so it's very important to show our full support for the leader.
According to a statement read at the end of the rallies, Iranians will not tolerate any acts of sabotage that would jeopardize the security and territorial integrity of the country.
I have been taking part in popular demonstrations because it's very important to keep the memory of our martyrs alive, all those who lost their lives so that we can live in a peaceful environment and an independent country.
We are here to pledge allegiance to the leader and to commemorate the rallies that put an end to the foreign-backed riots 13 years ago. We are here to say that we will support Ayatollah Khamenei till the last drop of our blood.
The occasion, dubbed the Ninth of Day Epic, refers to the huge demonstrations held in Tehran and other cities across Iran on the ninth of the month of Day in the Persian calendar, which falls on December 30th, in support of the Islamic Republic. The rallies restored calm in the country and put an end to the post-election unrest, and therefore every year Iranians mark the occasion by taking part in nationwide demonstrations.
More than anything, this is a show of solidarity. People have turned out in the capital, Tehran, to show their support for leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, and also to show that they are as vigilant as they were back in 2009. Gisumi Shah Ahmadi, Tehran.
The Iranian army's navy has staged a large-scale military exercise in the sea, of Oman and the north of the Indian Ocean. The drills are aimed at testing indigenously built military equipment and enhancing the country's preparedness against potential threats. Yusuf Jalali reports.
The Iranian army repels American vessels trying to violate Iran's southern waters. This is one of the scenarios of the first phase of a massive naval drill staged by the Iranian army's navy. Codenamed Zulfaghar, the maneuver is conducted over an area stretching from the Persian Gulf Strait of Hormuz to the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean.
The large-scale Zulfaghar maneuver is underway with the goal of integrating our network of armed forces and testing our naval defense capabilities. In this drill, we have carried out different defensive and offensive operations using our own domestically developed military equipment.
The drill involved all of the four branches of the Iranian army in 3 days of exercises. On the first day, the Navy conducted beaching or amphibious operations, which involved Marines in an operation ashore aimed at assaulting the enemy's coastal units.
Beaching an amphibious operation is an Iranian initiative which has long been adopted by different navies around the world. It's an effective way of breaking into the enemy's coast. Beaching has advanced over time according to the advances in the hardware, but the idea and the way it's implemented remains the same.
The first phase of the maneuver saw the use of the latest hardware built domestically by the Iranian armed forces, including surveillance and reconnaissance drones such as Ababil 3 and Mohajer 6, which can also conduct tactical and combat missions. The drill also involved the use of surface-to-surface missiles such as Dehlaviye guided missile to protect the Iranian beach against the enemy's amphibious operations.
The Iranian Navy says this is a routine drill which is staged every year to boost its naval force and fine-tune its homegrown military equipment. It says using its weapons, it is now fully prepared to confront any threat to Iran's territorial waters. Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drill.
A commander of the Iranian Army drills, Rear Admiral Habibullah Sayari, warns Iran's enemies that the army will respond to any attempt to violate the country's territorial integrity.
We can say that the equipment that you see used in the drills today, they are fully indigenous. There are different systems such as air defense system, the radar systems, different types of missiles, air-to-surface, surface-to-air, and different types of missiles, torpedoes, and the destroyers, the submarines, the tanks, the personnel carriers, all the equipment and the drones. We have reached the point that these are all manufactured domestically. This means that we have self-confidence. We have become self-reliant as the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Within our armed forces, we are tasked with defending the territorial integrity, the independence, and the Islamic establishment. So this indicates our might to defend our territorial integrity, that includes our sea, air, and land borders, and to protect our nation. And the enemies must know that in case of any aggression or in case of jeopardizing our interests in the sea, they will be threatened. As the leader said, the era of hit and run has come to an end. So if anyone takes any action against us, the enemy will be remorseful.
Well, a court in junta-ruled Myanmar finds ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi guilty on 5 counts of corruption. The court has ordered Suu Kyi to serve 7 more years in jail. The offenses are related to her lease and use of a helicopter while she was Myanmar's de facto leader. The latest court ruling wraps up the remaining cases against her. Suu Kyi's new verdict adds to sentences of at least 26 years, which range from corruption to illegally owning radio equipment. The former leader has denied all charges against her. Last week, the UN Security Council adopted the first ever resolution on Myanmar that called on the military junta to release all political prisoners. Myanmar's military seized power in February last year over alleged voter fraud during the 2020 elections. And South Korea will dramatically increase its military spending next year with hundreds of millions earmarked for anti-drone weapons. This after five North Korean drones entered South Korean territory earlier this week. Frank Smith reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
South Korea plans to significantly boost military spending over the next 5 years, an annual increase of nearly 7%. The Eastern Asian country aims to spend over $440 million on anti-drone weapons alone. The announcement comes only days after North Korea flew drones into the South Territory for the first time in 5 years.
According to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff, Monday, five North Korean drones crossed the border before breaking formation. Four of them headed to islands in the West Sea, while one of the drones continued south, reaching the skies over the outskirts of this city, the capital, Seoul.
It was the first such incident since 2017 when a drone crossed into South Korea and photographed a U.S. base here. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol, a conservative who came to office in May of this year, has blamed the previous progressive government's policy of engaging Pyongyang for the recent incident.
Given that efforts or military training to respond to such UAV drones have never been properly done since 2017, I think our people must have well seen how dangerous a policy relying on the North's good faith and peace agreements would be.
South Korea plans more joint military exercises with the U.S. for 2023, although much of the public wants talks with North Korea and a de-escalation of tensions.
We need to solve the problem peacefully through discussions between the two Koreas. I strongly disagree with the remarks made by President Yoon Suk-yeol, escalating the confrontation, which is really very inappropriate.
State-of-the-art weapons will continue to be developed. It's too dangerous now, so even if it takes some time, I think we should keep trying to talk and do some things together.
Meanwhile, North Korea has unveiled new goals for the country's military. Addressing a large committee meeting of the ruling Workers' Party, leader Kim Jong-un indicated on Wednesday that the country will continue its military development in 2023 after a record year of missile testing. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The Russian president has called for an increase in military cooperation with China as he hailed the two countries' efforts to counter Western influence. Vladimir Putin made the remarks via video link with his Chinese counterpart. Putin emphasized the importance of Sino-Russian strategic partnership as a stabilizing factor in the face of unprecedented Western pressure and provocations. The Kremlin leader referred to Xi Jinping as his dear friend and said that he would be expecting the Chinese leader at the Kremlin on a state visit in the coming spring. Since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, Western governments have put up billions of dollars in military aid to the country. Now the NATO Secretary General has called on the member states to provide Kyiv with even more weapons. During an interview with German media, Jens Stoltenberg said Ukraine's victory on the battleground is in the security interests of all NATO countries. He stressed that at the current moment, it's more important to provide ammunition for the systems Kyiv already owns. The NATO chief justified further weapon supplies to Ukraine by saying that most wars end through negotiations and Ukraine can achieve more if it succeeds militarily. Russia, however, has repeatedly condemned the West for arming Kyiv, saying the move only prolongs the war. Twitter's CEO has revealed that all social media platforms work with the U.S. government to censor content. Elon Musk released documents following his purchase of Twitter. The documents show the social media platform conspired with the FBI, CIA, Pentagon, and other government agencies to suppress information on U.S. elections, the issue of Ukraine, and the COVID-19 pandemic.
The United States has always prided itself as a country that protects freedom of speech. However, there are mounting evidence that when it comes to freedom of speech in social media platforms, the government of the U.S. is bending the rules in its favor to suppress narratives that it does not like. Twitter CEO Elon Musk has accused the U.S. government of pushing all social media platforms work with the U.S. government to censor content. According to Musk, every social media company is engaged in heavy censorship with significant involvement and at times explicit direction of the government. Musk was referring to internal Twitter communications published by journalist Matt Taibbi with his approval. The files showed the FBI acting as doorman to a vast program of social media surveillance and censorship, encompassing agencies across the federal government. Musk released documents following his purchase of Twitter. According to Taibbi, in addition to Twitter, the U.S. government was in contact with virtually every major tech firm, which included Facebook, Microsoft, Verizon, Reddit, and even Pinterest. According to the document, CIA agents nearly always sat in meetings of these firms with the FBI's Foreign Influence Task Force. The firms reportedly colluded with the FBI to remove content the agency wanted hidden, assisted the U.S. military's online influence campaigns, and censored, quote, anti-Ukraine narratives on behalf of multiple U.S. intelligence agencies.
I think a lot of people have questions. How involved is the government in monitoring and censoring the speech of ordinary people? What we've seen so far already, and we have definite conclusive proof of, is that there are lots and lots of reports where we see Twitter executives saying things like, DHS flagged this, the FBI flagged this, and then they have, there's a whole thread where they decide what to do about it. Do we remove it? Do we put a label on it? So there's tons of that stuff where they're clearly getting communications from the FBI.
Earlier this month, it was also revealed that the U.S. military uses Twitter to amplify its propaganda campaigns in West Asia. Twitter reportedly allowed CENTCOM to run fake accounts. Furthermore, it's believed that the U.S. government reportedly pressured social media platforms to shape online discourse. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The storm has severely hit vast parts of the U.S. This storm affected millions of Americans, downing power lines, canceling flights, and triggering a surge in delivery orders. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Guardian wrote in this regard, as millions of Americans around the country experienced the effects of a winter storm, thousands of workers in essential and emergency jobs had no choice but to work outdoors in blizzards and record low temperatures. Over 200 million Americans were placed under winter weather alerts heading into Christmas. Regions throughout the West and Midwest were hit by record-breaking low temperatures. In the South, Florida experienced its coldest holiday in decades. Hundreds of flights were canceled and thousands of Americans in hard-hit areas lost power. With winter storm Eliota stretching 2,000 miles from the Great Lakes near Canada to the Rio Grande on the Mexico border, downing power lines, canceling flights, and triggering a surge in delivery orders, there was no chance of cancellation for airport workers, cell phone tower climbing technicians, delivery drivers, and others who found their workload surging. Inclement winter weather poses a lot of risks and increases workloads for cell tower climbers to maintain and conduct reports, said Ryan Duppel, a tower foreman and member of Tower Climbers Union, TCUCWA. The physical stress it does to you and your mentality when you go on to a site in frigid temperatures, it doesn't even have to be 6 Fahrenheit out. If it's 20 Fahrenheit out, a few hundred feet in the air, the temperature is a lot different. And the wind chill is a huge factor, said Dupol, adding, all of that is really tough. It's tough on your body, your lungs, your joints ache more. If there is any burst skin, there is possible tissue damage, and you don't even realize it because you are so busy until you get down. He said there was significant pressure on workers to perform jobs through the worst weather, as they are not compensated for downtime if they don't perform the work. Tower climbers are often away from home, staying in hotels near job sites, and employers will often find someone else to complete work on a tower in cases where a worker declines to work because of poor weather. Having suffered through a summer of blistering heat, essential workers now face an even more dangerous foe in the cold. According to a CDC report, extreme cold is responsible for more than twice, about 63%, as many deaths as extreme heat, 31%. There are a lot of companies out that will force their guys to work in temperatures like today. The reality of it is that's very dangerous for your body. The job is dangerous enough as it is, added Dupol. When you go outside and you don't take a deep breath in without feeling like you can't breathe, you can only imagine how it feels hundreds of feet in the air. Mickey Sigel Do Hernandez of the CWA said the extreme temperatures highlighted the issues like educating the workforce around job protections, rights of workers in refusing to work in dangerous conditions, and proper staffing. We push for policies that give workers the right to take breaks or to get warm, to have the right kind of protection clothing provided by the employer. Work schedules may come into play. All of those things are part of what needs to be done in order to have people be protected, said Sigel Do Hernandez. When the public is told to stay indoors, there are workers that have to be outdoors, but their lives are in danger because they are on the road, they have to travel, they have to be in those conditions. Meanwhile, Common Dreams reported a faith-based coalition's annual report on the economic impact of climate-driven natural disasters revealed recently that each of the costliest extreme weather events of 2022 caused more than $3 billion in damage. The report entitled Counting the Cost 2022, A Year of Climate Breakdown, was published by Kristen Aid, a London-based relief agency of over 40 UK and Irish churches seeking more urgent climate action by Global North nations, which are most responsible for greenhouse gas emissions that fuel global heating. The costliest disaster in this year's report, Hurricane Ian, struck Cuba and the southeastern United States, killing more than 150 people in both countries, causing around $100 billion in damage and displacing 40,000 people. Other major natural disasters covered in the report include the floods in Pakistan that killed over 1,700 people, while displacing 7 million others and causing $30 billion in economic damage, and the European drought and heat wave, which killed more than 1,000 people and cost around $20 billion. The report's contributors note that most of the damage estimates are based solely on insured losses and that the true financial cost of each event is likely even higher. The number of extreme weather events we have seen across the globe in both 2021 and again in 2022 should be a wake-up call to the international community. Newcastle University School of Engineering professor Hayley Flower, who specializes in the impacts of climate change, said in a statement. Christian Aid CEO Patrick Watt said that having 10 separate climate disasters in the last year that each cost more than $3 billion points to the financial cost of inaction on the climate crisis. But behind the dollar figures lie millions of stories of human loss and suffering. He added, without major cuts in greenhouse gas emissions, this human and financial toll will only increase. Christian Aid said the report underscores the importance of urgent climate action, including the speedy implementation of the loss and damage fund recently agreed upon at the COP27 climate summit in Egypt. Described by proponents as a form of climate reparations, the fund will be financed by wealthy nations in order to help countries of the global south, which are least responsible for the planetary emergency, mitigate climate impacts. The creation of the Loss and Damage Fund at the COP27 Climate Summit was a huge breakthrough for people living on the front lines of this crisis. This report shows just how badly it is needed and the urgency with which we need to see it up and running, said Nusrat Chaudhry, Christian Aid's Climate Justice Policy Advisor in Bangladesh, adding, "The people flooded in Pakistan or victims of cyclone in the U.S., need this support to rebuild their lives. Many people in the global south dealing with these disasters cannot afford insurance to cover their losses, and they often can't rely on the state to act as a safety net. The fact they have done almost nothing to cause the climate emergency is why it is so unfair. They are left to suffer without support. We must see that change in 2023.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali, al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Messenger of Allah. And Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet. We find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam lived a short period of his holy life in the city of Baghdad. While he was in the city of Baghdad, he tended towards knowledge and wisdom, and his eminence established the basis and the principles of knowledge, and he made use of the period of his stay in Baghdad in order to spread knowledge and wisdom and teach the different sciences and to merge the intellect with the Islamic sciences and literature. A great number of scholars and narrators joined Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam to learn from his eminence the different Islamic sciences such as theology, philosophy, jurisprudence, and the interpretation of the Quran, the Tafsir.
IRIB English Radio.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, we are honored to be talking about the dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam lived in an era where moral and social corruption and ethical corruption was quite high. Of course, we know that historically, because the usurping Abbasid political governmental establishment was itself morally corrupt and morally decadent to the bone, that this was spreading into the society. As the commander of the faithful Imam Ali alayhi salam says that the people are upon the religion of their leaders or those in power, mulukihim. So we find that the people, of course, the morality and the ethical aspect of Islam and the spiritual aspect of Islam was becoming weaker and weaker by the day. And of course, this was a trajectory that had been happening over decades, but it just seemed to be getting worse and worse by each passing day. So Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam did focus and emphasize upon the ethical, moral, akhlaqi, and spiritual aspect of Islam. So here we find that at one point in time, a man comes to Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam and asks his eminence to give him some points of advice, some pieces of advice that will help him in his life. And so Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam answers the man in the dialogue and he says, "Make patience as your pillow, embrace poverty, refuse desires, contradict fancy, and know that you are always under the eye of Allah. Then see how you will do." Now, in the previous programs, we talked about making patience as your pillow, and we had two sessions on embracing poverty. If you haven't listened to those, please do, because they complete this conversation that we are going to continue and talk about today. In this program, we talk about this place where Imam al-Jawad says to refuse desires. Now, we live in a day and age where we are being taught by the anti-Islamic the anti-divine powers, the anti-Islamic powers, the anti-religious powers, the anti-divine powers, the anti-spirituality powers, and in reality, the powers of the world that only care about their own materialistic, greedy, and devilish desires are telling the people of the world that they must satisfy every single one of their desires. Matter of fact, these followers of Shaitan and these followers of Satan, they tell the rest of the world that life is only meant to satisfy your desires. Every single desire that you have must be satisfied. When in reality, these desires that we try to satisfy in this temporary world are things that will not remain. The Immaculate Imams, peace and blessings upon them, say how fleeting a desire was which was fulfilled, and how long is the regret from fulfilling that desire. These desires, and of course, we're not talking about the desire to become close to God or the desire to be a good Muslim or the desire to help the needy or the desire to oppose the arrogant and the Satan followers and the people of falsehood. No, these are the desires, the base mean desires, the desires to, you know, carnal desires, lowly desires, physical desires. These kind of things, things that pull us towards this materialistic realm, whether it is desires to have power and glory and wealth and to use them for our own personal, materialistic, selfish, greedy desires. Here, Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam says that if you want to become powerful in the spiritual sense, if you want to become perfect in the spiritual sense, then you're going to have to refuse these negative desires, these evil desires, these bad desires. Desires that if they overwhelm us, they surely lead us to opposing and disobeying the Almighty Allah. And of course, if we fall into this this pit and this dungeon and this dark well of disobedience to the Almighty Allah, then our hereafter comes into very serious danger. And this fleeting desires for our own carnal and lower base self will finish here, but the punishment of the hereafter will surely continue for a time that we cannot imagine. So while we're on this earth, the best thing to do is to refuse these lowly desires and to desire that which the Almighty Allah desires. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Jawad alayhi salam.
And now we invite you to listen to a shorter speech by Shaykh Ayyub Rashid.
Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. When we examine the life of Imam number one, we come to know that his father, Imam Ali bin Musa Ridha, salamullahi alayhi, spent the difficult life when he was kept far away from his son, Imam Al-Jawad. To take Imam Al-Ridha to that area which today we know as Mashhad, for a father to leave his young son alone in Medina, it was a difficult. But yes, a test was decided to happen, and it happened. Now, when Imam Al-Jawad received the news that his father, Imam Al-Ridha, has passed away, at that time he was 8 years of age. Today, when you look at a young man of 8, you cannot give many responsibilities to him. But when we come back again to Alamul Amr, Allah has decreed that this will happen and he will become the Imam. And it was a difficult moment for people who used to follow Imam Ridha alayhi salam. When they looked at the young Imam after him, you could see that in a normal circumstances as human beings, when you are told that this is your leader, when you look at your leader, there are many qualities you want to know from your leader. One of the qualities is that maturity is important. He can fit to be the leader. It is whether he can fulfill the duties of a leadership or not.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
British media have reported that high cost of living crisis in the UK has prompted people in some cities to eat pet food. Britons face a collapse in living standards, higher bills, tax hikes, and increased unemployment as the economy slumps into recession. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, British media reported recently that people were eating pet food because they can't afford real food anymore. According to the report, parts of Wales were hit so hard by poverty that people were forced to stoop to the lowest levels to just feed their families. It comes after new census data suggests six of Wales' most deprived communities are in Cardiff, the capital city of Wales. Last month, food costs rose again with shop prices of groceries over 12% higher than a year before, according to the report. I'm still shocked by the fact that we have people who are eating pet food. Mark Seed, who runs a community food project in Trowbridge, East Cardiff, told the BBC, adding, "There are people who are trying to heat their food on a radiator or a candle." Seed noted that nowadays British households that are struggling to survive could be found in areas beyond the regions that were long associated with poverty. He said to tackle the poverty, the government needed to change its policy to focus on people and not places. He said, "Cardiff is a flourishing city, however, there are pockets of deprivation which are simply not acceptable." The charity officials say people were not being paid enough to afford the essentials as the cost of living crisis is pushing prices way up. Official government statistics indicate the UK's inflation rose to 41-year high of above 11%. The government continues to blame the Russia-Ukraine crisis and the COVID pandemic as the main factors behind the economic downturn. Meanwhile, Daily Mail wrote, the cost of living crisis in the UK is set to cripple Christmas, with millions cutting back on gifts or not buying them at all, as inflation hit its highest level in 41 years. Amid fears it could peak around Christmas, households are expected to pare back their celebrations. Councils and businesses are also cutting festivities to save cash. Britons have decided they will buy no presents at all this year, with many concentrating on stockings and gifts for their children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews to ensure they don't miss out. The Christmas cutbacks will also be obvious in many homes, with some not buying a tree, putting up lights and asking for jumpers and slippers as presents so they can keep the heating off over the festive period. One emergency worker tweeted in this regard, "That is the trouble. I am just not buying anything other than essentials at the moment. And our family have decided to do a secret Santa for Christmas present, so we all just have to buy one present and we'll receive one, up to the value of £30, exception for children, through." Another said, "Decided not doing presents. Usually we do a secret Santa within the family, but this year life is too stressful for that, and we are cutting costs. No cards either. I'll freeze a few bits for a nice Xmas lunch. That's be it." In the outside world, businesses have been axing Christmas parties for staff. Restaurants are also expected to close on Christmas Day and run reduced hours during the holidays due to the cost of heating, lighting, and staffing the kitchen and the restaurant. Sarah Hall, founder of Waterlooville-based The Silk Purse Guild, said, "We have already put our Christmas tree up so that it feels festive for as long as possible. The lights on it are solar-powered, as we can't afford to power them through the mains. My husband and I have bought each other a pair of fluffy sleepers each, and that's it. We will be wearing them on Christmas Day to stave off the cold and watch movies all the day. I bought all of my Christmas presents in July, and I knew that things were going to be difficult this year. We will be watching all the pennies and trying to get bargains from everything from the turkey to the Brussels sprouts. I work with hundreds of artisan businesses who are dependent on Christmas as they make gifts, and it's going to be a brutally tough one for them all." The Financial Times also reported its key supplier Wee Butteril and Son lost its entire flock of 18,000 birds to bird flu. They were encouraging customers to choose beef. Chris Godfrey of Godfrey's Butchers in Highbury, London, told the newspaper, "The situation is actually dire. We sell very premium quality free-range animals that all live outside the rummage around. The intensive farms are not hit as badly in the sense they can have sealed barns," he said. "Orders are coming at a manic pace." Sainsbury's chief executive Simon Roberts said this month, "The good news is that about a third of our turkey volume comes from frozen, and we have ordered more turkeys this year than we sold last year." The teams will be working very hard to fill any gaps as far as we can, he added. Although turkey remains a key part of our Christmas offer, increasingly customers are looking at other products. There has been a real move into beef in recent years. Fewer than half of households will be eating turkey, and all the trimmings at Christmas for the first time at Shoppers gobble up alternatives. Also, according to Financial Times, a shopkeeper said the restaurants all over the UK will be closed over Christmas or opening less to save money on heating and staff. She told reporters it's a worrying time. Price increases are thick and fast, and the more out of control it gets, the harder it is to run a business. We can't pass on all the increases we are paying, otherwise people will be paying in excess of £10 a pint, which is not sustainable or feasible given for many. That is a luxury item. We are trying to absorb cost where possible, but we are seeing suppliers pass on their entire price increases to us, which is unsustainable. It's impossible to predict it could go higher. We don't know, but it feels out of control. Given Christmas was largely cancelled last year, it will be really interesting to see what people do and how people spend and save. We are seeing huge fluctuations. Bookings are up for Christmas because Christmas celebrations were cancelled last year. We are seeing Christmas happen later because of the World Cup, and we are seeing restaurants open for shorter hours, mainly due to heating and staffing cost. We are trying as a business to ride the wave, but for smaller businesses, there will be a lot of pain to come.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith which has been narrated from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam. In this beautiful hadith, the Imam says, "Beware about pondering over the essence of Allah, for verily, pondering about Allah only increases one's bewilderment." You know, this might give rise to a question, and that question is this: haven't we been encouraged to think about Allah, you know, to ponder about Him? You know, obviously, if we want to worship God, we have to kind of think about Him. You know, you can't worship something, you can't direct your heart towards something that you have no knowledge of, right? So, isn't this kind of contradictory? This seems to, be contradictory, you know. So, perhaps the response to this question can be given in the following way. That in these hadiths that we read, you know, like the one we just recited for our esteemed listeners, in which the Imam kind of prohibits people from thinking about God, it's referring to thinking about God and, you know, pondering over Him using the lower faculties, right? Like the faculty of a vision, right? Or the faculty of our imagination, right? Or our estimation, you know? These lower faculties, right? Which are not equipped to kind of understand intellectual matters, right? The Imam is kind of prohibiting one to use those faculties to think about God, right? But the intellect, when it's not contaminated with these kind of lower faculties, right? There's no reason why it should be prohibited from contemplating God, right? This could be one answer to the question. We might answer it in another way by saying that the intellect, it has the ability to understand, right, God's attributes, some of His attributes, a lot of His attributes, at least those ones that we have a visage of within ourselves, like, for example, knowledge, power, life, these kind of things, right? These kind of attributes, you know, examples of which we find within ourselves and we understand to be, attributes of perfection, we can say that these are attributes of God. But, you know, and we also know, on the other hand, that, you know, God has all perfection. There might be perfections that we have no knowledge of, that He has, you know, and that have not manifested themselves within His creation, right? But what those are, there's no way, and there's no actually, there is no means for our, you know, limited minds to kind of understand what those are. That's perhaps maybe what, you know, the Imam is talking about here. So in continuation, the Imam says, he said, "For verily pondering over Allah only increases one's bewilderment. Verily, Allah Mighty and Exalted cannot be perceived by the sights. La tudrikuhu al-absar." Right, so this kind of it kind of reinforces that first interpretation that we talked about. Wala yusafu bil miqdar. He's not described by any kind of measurement, right? In the sense that He's not a physical body, cannot be seen, right? So don't try to think about Him in terms of, you know, things that you can see and you know, you can attribute with, you know, quantity and quantitatively. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the prohibition of pondering about Allah's essence in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio.
صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor.